It is true. That's why it's funny. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. It is 7:13 here on a Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. Weather-wise, it was decent, although we've had bouts of rain. And depending on where you were last night, maybe even some hail as we had another storm kind of blow through Ottawa. Today looks like it's going to be a decent day. Humid again. Tomorrow looks kind of wet. Wednesday looks good. Thursday looks kind of wet. So kind of up and down if you're going to be on holidays this week, which our own Sean Simpson is, by the way. Simmer's off for the next couple of weeks. So it's JR, it's Hammer, and we welcome our guest co-host for this morning. You would normally hear him as the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators, now in the co-host chair from his beautiful palatial log home outside of Dean Brown, outside of Carp. What is your home address? Are you Ottawa? Are you Kanata? Are you Carp? Where are you?
Well, originally Carp, but after they amalgamated everything, technically Ottawa, but either Carp or Ottawa will get you here. We're kind of in neither. We're okay.
You're in no man's land.
Yeah. We're out in the country, so we're not in the Carp the village, but we're kind of halfway between Stittsville and Carp.
Very nice.
Out in the country.
Very nice.
All good.
Good. Well, thanks a lot for jumping in today. Really appreciate it. How's your, for those, and now Dean was on with us on Friday night as part of our round one draft coverage, but by and large, your days have been quieter since the Sen season came to an end a couple of months ago. So what have you been up to? Anything naughty?
Nothing major, you know, just stuff around the house and, you know, with COVID still percolating, well, you know, spend a lot of time at home and just doing stuff around here. And to be honest with you, just, you know, for a while there, waiting for the next shot and got both shots and, you know, just that kind of stuff. We're like everybody else. We have stuff going on. My niece has moved in. So my kids are basically, you know, they're gone. They're adults now. They're people. They're taxpayers. They're citizens now. Connor's in Montreal. And Maya's working. And so my niece Soleil has moved in with us from Winnipeg because she's going to start attending Carleton in the fall. And so she's bunking in with us now. So we've moved her in and got her all settled and stuff like that. So nothing major, just, you know, the life shuffle.
There you go. All right. Good weekend beyond the draft.
Yeah. Watched a little bit of the draft when I got home after our little stint and caught some of the replays of what they did and then listening to the boys on Saturday. I have to be honest with you, you know, since I don't know when I stopped trying to follow all the draft eligible players outside of the first round, because when you're working in the NHL, well, if you have any other job, to be frank with you, it's just too much. It's just, there's just too much stuff to be able to follow. So to be honest with you, when I was listening to some of our draft coverage while I was tooting around at home on Saturday, there's so many names that I had no idea about. So it was great.
You didn't have any thoughts on Zach Ostapchuk?
Huh? Yeah.
Other than how, while you'd like him from a Sens winning perspective to be an NHL player, from a play-by-play announcer's perspective, not necessarily one that flows off the tongue very easily.
Yeah, I really hope he makes the NHL, and but he doesn't do it for a while, so he'll give me a chance to work on that name, because that's not one that's going to roll off the tongue when you call in games.
Yes,
you can't do anything about it. But
no.
You know, the bigger thing for me, JR, as far as, you know, getting ready for some of these guys to eventually be Senators, for me. You know, the rookie camp is often a huge part of that. And that's, you know, very, very much up in the air. As we talked, I think you asked him that on Friday when we talked to Pierre Dorion after the draft, or somebody did at some point. And, you know, that being up in the air not only is not great for the franchise or for the rookies as far as getting to know each other and, you know, getting on that development train, the dev camp, it's, you know, makes it more difficult for those of us who want to start paying attention and following these young men as they make their way to the league and, you know, try to learn early how to pronounce their names and, you know, things like that that mm-hmm. are, you know, not glamorous, but part of the nuts and bolts of getting ready for someone to be in the NHL. And so if there isn't a rookie camp or dev camp, depending on what you call it, it really is called the development camp. But that's a loss, not just for Ottawa, but for every team, because the, you know, the development camp, which virtually I think all the teams do now, is really an important part of, getting players assimilated into your system and getting to know your people and how you do things and how to train and being with the strength and conditioning coaches and understanding. And not just that, for people who may not know, in the development camp, you know, they're only on the ice for a certain amount of time each day. And so they have other stuff for the guys, you know, fitness, they have nutrition stuff, cooking classes, you know, because a lot of these players, when they get to the NHL, for some of them, it's the first time they've ever had to cook for themselves. So they have cooking classes for the guys to help those who've never cooked before or don't know how to cook and how to cook nutritious stuff, the right kind of food. So it's not just cones and skating drills. There's a whole lot more to it.
Yeah. And I did ask Pierre Dorion that question about development camp and whether it was happening or not, because off the top of my head, as we were wrapping up with him, I said, I don't remember seeing anything on whether that'll happen or not. And Pierre really didn't have an answer, as I don't think any NHL general manager does at this stage, because we're still in a state of flux as far as travel restrictions and where people can get to and where they can't. So I'm not sure at the end of the day I really understood what his answer is, other than they're trying to pull something together at some point. But that's the extent of it at this stage.
Yeah, I think one of the big problems logistically is the kids who come from places other than Canada. Because while travel restrictions have eased greatly in the last few months, there's still a lot of questions about all those kinds of issues. And then having a development camp, and is that a bubble? And if it is a bubble again, how do you pull that off with now regular customers in hotels? And, you know, I think that there's just a whole bunch of questions. And the other thing is, I think that, you know, if not just for Ottawa, but a lot of teams, there's, you know, a year, probably 2 months, really intense, but a year of logistical setup for a development camp. They're always working on this, working on that. It gets real intense for 2 months leading up to it. But if it isn't done and booked and all these different things booked and you know, set up in advance, it's not something where you can just say, you know what, next in 10 days, guys, we're going to have the development camp, so let's get on that. It's pretty hard to put all those pieces together in 10 days or 2 weeks when you don't have them set up now. Like I said, you know, you can still find a lot of hotel space to put up all those young guys. But that's one of the nuts and bolts things you're going to have to start doing pretty quickly, and feeding them all and all the logistics of you know, having 40 guys or 45 guys come into town, and you have to take care of everything for them. You got to get all your van drivers back again. You got to get your vans from, you know, your dealership that sponsors it, you know, just all the nuts and bolts of holding it. And I'm not sure how much of that stuff is glued together, because for everybody, it's so up in the air. I'm not sure you go out and get everything glued together. And then, you know, so I'm pessimistic that it would actually happen this year, just because there's so much to do and there really isn't very much time at all.
All right. Certainly lots of controversy over the Sens draft class, just in terms of how the so-called draft experts had ranked it. So we'll get into that to talk about who the Sens pick coming up in the next segment. But I wanted to quickly touch on Canada at the Olympics, because I think a lot of people are waking up this morning that, and again, it's in Tokyo. They're 13 hours ahead of us. It's 8:21 in the evening. So they're wrapping up day three of competition over in Tokyo. So many of the events are happening as people sleep. So let's take you to Canada's first gold medal moment. It came in the pool last night, courtesy CBC.
McNeil right in the hunt. Maggie McNeil certainly is in the hunt with 15 meters to go. She might have a slight edge. She's certainly got a chance at a medal. Here they come. There's the touch. He gets gold. Gold for Canada. Maggie McNeil in 55-59. And she can't see it. Now she can. And they are whooping it up in Woodstock for that Canadian record and gold medal.
Again, that's courtesy CBC. And if you can't quite reach it out because the announcer is finishing off, it was a great call. But you can hear the mic somewhat pick up her in the pool. And there is a moment when she touches. And again, the scoreboard is at the other end of the pool. And she wears glasses, if you saw the post-race interview. And I don't think she's, well, no one that wears glasses sees exceptionally well. But she especially, because she squints. And then she realizes her name is at the top of the scoreboard, of the race scoreboard, and that she has just won a gold medal at the Olympics. And her words are, oh, my God. And that moment, you can just imagine, doesn't matter what age you are, but you're 21 years old, you're at the Olympics for the first time, and you've just won a gold medal and Canada's first gold medal at the Olympics. That it absolutely is an oh, my God moment, and such a priceless reaction. And what you love about the Olympics, right? Again, we don't know many of these athletes. They come into our lives every 4 years, and sometimes it's the only time it'll be. We may hear of an athlete like Maggie McNeil, but it's so great to watch their just natural reaction to achieving a lifetime goal.
Yeah, it was amazing. And you know what? When we were sitting here watching, and we all kind of said the same thing because we watched the relay. We saw the relay, and there was one interview that she did that wasn't on television or radio. I forget where I read it. But anyway, they were interviewing, obviously, all four of the girls from the relay. And she was mentioning that she couldn't tell exactly where Alexiak was because she said, you know, when I'm standing back of the block after I've swung my leg, I don't have my glasses on. And I don't see well without my glasses. So in the relay, you know, they're all behind the block waiting for Alexiak to bring it home, but she can't really tell. She can't tell. She can't see well. So when she finished that race and looked up, we all looked at each other and said, she can't see. She can't see the board. She can't see. And then you see her face, you realize somebody's probably yelled something to her. And later on, she admitted that somebody started yelling and, you know, she thought it was something good, but didn't know she was first. And when it finally kicked in, you know, that reaction was so natural and so real. And we were flipping around, actually, and we didn't catch it. We didn't catch her reaction live, because in flipping around, we ended up on NBC because I forget what we were watching. But there was something we didn't want to watch that was on the Canadian coverage. So we flipped around, and there was something on NBC. So we were watching that, and NBC's coverage got to her very late. They concentrated on the American who lost, and they concentrated on the Chinese swimmer who was supposed to win. And then they finally got over to her, and they didn't have her reaction. I'm sure later on they showed it somewhere else, but we flipped over very quickly, and they were replaying the reaction. So it was so natural and so real. And you're right. It's one of those things where shamefully we don't have a relationship, you know, with many of these young athletes, because sadly, you know, we don't like to admit it, but the reality is the bulk of Canada ignores amateur sports, high level amateur sports, for most of the year until a major championship. And they only recognize it. We only recognize it if someone wins something big and somebody flashes the images in our face. So, you know, people are now going to know her. They know the women's relay team. You get to know these athletes more and better. And everybody on the relay team, everybody who saw the relay knows Alexiak because of what she did when she was a 16-year-old and the medals that she won. But you're right. You feel so good for them because you know how much effort and how much commitment it takes just to get there and to win in the Olympics against the best in the world at what you do. And then to have that natural reaction of being, not knowing if you won or not, and being surprised is just... it's one of those heartwarming stories that we as Canadians, and I'm sure every country, you just love that story. You just love that story of natural, real emotion, not panning for the cameras, not, you know, oh, what face should I make? Because I know the cameras are going to be on. You know, that didn't exist. And I think that's why, you know, we oftentimes love these athletes when they win, because we don't know them. It's surprising to us. And most of them haven't received media training, to be honest with you. So oftentimes, most of their reactions to whatever it is, good or bad, are very natural and very real. And to be frank, let's be honest, you know, in a lot of professional sports nowadays, it's not. You know, athletes are media trained. They take training in it. They know they're being, you know, videoed and audioed all the time. Some are more careful than others. And some of them, you know, like I said, they know they're being shot. They know they're being videoed. And so, you know, they control all those emotions sometimes. And sometimes they overblow the emotions sometimes because they know they're being videoed. So I think, JR, we're all kind of the same in that when you see something like that, it really does touch you because they're not there for the money. They didn't make any money. They didn't, you know, she's not doing this for a living. You can't make a living being a swimmer in Canada. So, you know, I think it's one of those things that it touches everybody. It makes you proud to be a Canadian because humility and anonymity are often how all of us live here in Canada and just try to get along and do the best you can and be a good person and have a good life. So when something great like that happens, it's heartwarming.
It was a neat aspect of her. And again, she's from Woodstock, Ontario, which is kind of near my old stomping grounds. And there was a part of the CBC coverage last night that all of her... friends, family, people she knew, people she was in the swim club with. She swam, I think, in London, Ontario. But they all got together at the local drive-in to watch it on the big screen. The Oxford drive-in. I used to hang out at the Oxford drive-in, man. That was my, like, when I was 17 and 18, that's where JR tried to make things happen and always failed, quite frankly, the Oxford drive-in. It took me way back to the early days.
So, I've been to the Oxford Drive-In too. I lived in London for 2.5 years before I got to Ottawa. I have been to the Oxford Drive-In. I saw a half ton with dairy farm decals on it. It might have been you.
It could have been me. Again, trying and failing. So anyway, that was a nice moment. Small town Canada moment right there. So our first gold medal. We've added bronze as well in women's judo this morning as well. So Canada now up to 4 medals. On the downside, our women's basketball team, a lot of people think it is a medal contender. Lost their first game to Serbia earlier this morning, 72-68. So we'll keep you updated. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, one of the other things that we were kind of glued to, and there was no Canadians in it. Well, no, there was a Canadian, but she finished second last, so you didn't see it through most of it. We watched the women's skateboarding last night, and the only reason we watched is, never watched it before, not a big skateboard guy, and none of us are, but all three of us are sitting around watching this. It ended up a 13-year-old Japanese girl won, and the girl who came second was a 13-year-old girl from Brazil. And we were sitting there watching, and like the American woman who was in the final, she's 34. You know, so the width in women's skate, I don't know if it's the same in men's, I don't follow it, so I don't know. But you're sitting there, and the little girl from Brazil, Tony Hawk first sent out a video, because they do these vignettes, first sent out a video of her when she was 8, because he found, somebody sent him video of her skateboarding in her town at 8 years old wearing a tutu. And at 8, I think she weighed about 40 pounds. And now that she's 13, I think she weighs 45. Right. Like just a little tiny speck of a woman. And even the announcers are going like, what is the future of skateboarding when the gold and silver medal in this sport are 2 13-year-olds. You know, they could be in as many as 9 more Olympic Games, for heaven's sake. So
yes,
we found that very compelling, even though it wasn't a Canadiana thing. It was just like these two little, you know, children are going to win medals in this.
Yeah.
It's just part of many of the compelling stories about the Olympics.
Yeah, that is for sure the allure of it, the coming out of nowhere aspect to it. All right, so Canada again at 4 medals, 1 gold, 2 silver, and 1 bronze as we wrap up day 3 of competition over in Tokyo. We'll keep you updated throughout the rest of the morning. We'll take a break at 7:30. When we come back, we'll talk about the Senators and the draft. It was certainly in the eyes of outsiders and the so-called draft experts, widely panned as far as what Ottawa did. The Sens would beg to differ. We'll come back. We'll chat about all of that and the controversial moment of the weekend as well. The Montreal Canadiens drafting Logan Mailloux, even though he asked not to be picked. Not only did they pick him, they picked him in the first round. So we'll get into that as well. Don't forget, Dave Poulin will join us after 8. TSN Hockey Insider after 9. Trent Mann, the chief scout of the Sens, to wrap up the draft weekend. That's all straight ahead here on a Monday morning. Dean Brown sitting in for Simmer. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Hammer and Dean Brown sitting in for Simmer is on holidays for the next couple of weeks. We'll have Dave Poulin, TSN Hockey Insider, with his thoughts on a very busy NHL weekend. Not so much the draft, but more so some pretty significant trades made Friday and Saturday specifically, but even drifting into yesterday as well. So Dave Poulin will join us coming up after 8, and then Trent Mann, chief scout of the Sens, after 9 o'clock this morning. Let's take you back to Friday night, round 1 of the draft. The Sens select 10th overall right wing Tyler Boucher out of the U.S. developmental team. Because of injury and illness, he only ended up playing a handful of games this past year. Like a lot of other players, a lot of mystery around this year's draft, with some players not playing at all, others playing some playing a semblance of a full season, but maybe not where they were supposed to play. So the entire thing had the feeling of a bit of a crapshoot. And Ottawa's draft, at least in the eyes of the experts, kind of reflected that. They went, well, to use the term, off the board. Certainly in terms of the consensus picks, Tyler Boucher being the best example. He was ranked late first or in the second round by most people. Sens chose him 10th overall. Here's Tyler Boucher when he joined us on our TSN 1200 draft coverage on how much he was surprised to be chosen at 10.
I had a good interview process with them, you know, in the past. And I think, you know, they were looking for a player, you know, like me. I think I bring an element that, you know, you can't find in a lot of players. And I think that's what they saw in me. I kind of was just in shock. I think, you know, you dream about getting drafted as a kid. You know, and it was just a really special moment for me and my family.
I think a lot of people who are watching the draft coverage on television said that when he was picked, it was kind of like, oh, man, didn't look very happy to be drafted by Ottawa. As he said right there, I think I was just shocked that I went to, where I did. But more than happy to be selected and goes 10th overall. DJ Smith joined the boys on our Saturday coverage. Of all the people with the Sens who would think you would be happy about adding a player like Tyler Boucher, a physical player, I think the Sens head coach would agree.
At the end of the day, all the scouts and everyone involved here is telling me that. Brady Tkachuk texted to say he's our kind of player. So, you know, we continue to have skill, but also add to our toughness element and tough to play against. Model here, and I just think we'll continue to get better.
6'2", 205, right wing, and Dean compared himself when he was on with us on Friday night to, there was a semblance of, I think he mentioned Tom Wilson, Josh Anderson, and Matthew Tkachuk were the three players that he said he liked to model himself after. So I don't think he could meld those three players together. Well, that's an interesting combination.
Yeah, if you meld those three players together, you have lots of aggression, lots of snarl, and lots of suspension games. So, I got to be honest with you. When we were talking to him, JR, the thing that surprised me the most is he describes himself as that kind of player. His father was an NHL goaltender, but his favorite player growing up was Daniel Briere, who's none of any of those things. So I found that. You know what that reminded me of? It reminded me of DJ Smith. I'm probably going to be wrong about this, but you know, he grew up in Windsor. So when we were in Detroit for a game, obviously before COVID, before this year, I forget who, it might've been Gordy turned to him and said, you know, you grew up here. Like, were you, he said, yeah, I was a big Detroit fan. I think Gordy asked him, well, who's your favorite player? And I'm probably wrong on this, but I think he said Larionov, but it was basically a high skill, I think Russian player. I think it was Larionov. And again, you think to yourself, well, hold on. When you were a player, you were a big, rugged, you know, physical defenseman, and your favorite player growing up was a high skill, no hitting Russian. And so I think a little bit bizarre. So that kind of struck me when he was talking about that. And the other thing is, when we were talking to him, JR, he really didn't make any excuses or, well, you know, I had a tough year. He had pneumonia, he had COVID, and he had two knee injuries. One of them required surgery. Like, he had a super hard year, besides the fact that everybody's life was turned upside down as far as being a player, getting to play somewhere, anywhere. He didn't play very much because of COVID and because of injuries, but he had a brutal year last year. But when we asked him that question, you know, he almost moved on from it quickly. He just appeared to me to be a guy that he's not an excuse maker. Just, yeah. Well, anyway, so our season, you know, he just wanted to move on. Didn't want to talk about it really. Didn't avoid it, but really didn't want it to be the basis of our conversation with him. So I found that a bit interesting when I thought back about our conversation with him, how little time we spent on those things, because it was pretty apparent he didn't have much interest other than recounting that he went through it. Anyway, that's done. That's over. I'm at the dev camp right now. Got to get up tomorrow at 7:30 to do this. And here we go. You know, so I found that interesting.
Yeah, it was a bit of an odd, you know, I think he was with his parents, but he was at the summer showcase, the American summer showcase, their development camp, and actually played a game yesterday, believe it or not. But it's the whole thing, because the draft has been pushed back a month. So everybody's calendars are off just a little bit. So your normal, well, normally you'd be in the rink, right? You'd be shaking hands with your parents, yeah, and you know, and getting up on the stage. But this was a virtual draft again, so everything is just a little bit off. So yeah, he was saying, yeah, I'm talking to you guys right now. We'll maybe get back and you know, celebrate a little bit, but I got to be up at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning to get ready for the next day at the summer showcase. So Tyler Boucher is going to Boston University. And will be there for it at least a year. I asked Pierre Dorion about sort of longer term plans, and they're year by year. I think physically, just the way he's been described, and even looking at him at 6'2", 205, physically he's probably close to being NHL ready. But it's the rest of it that we just don't know, right? Where is the game at in terms of the rest of it? Where is the mental side of the game at? And again, he's just 18 years old, so this is a longer-term play, as all picks are when you're talking about an 18-year-old that's maybe not a superstar at the top of the draft. There's a very good chance that maybe not even one player from this year's draft given what's transpired this past year, will play in the National Hockey League this year.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you know what? I'm going to make a bet right now. I'm going to make a bet he comes out after 1 year at Boston College. And the reason I'm saying that is it's something that a college scout said to me years and years and years ago. You know, it's like poker. You're looking for those telltale signs. And I've always looked out for this one because it's always stuck with me. If it's July or August, and you ask a guy who's going into college hockey what his major is, and he's not really sure yet,
which is what he said.
He's not committed for 4 years. He's going there to get ready to be in the NHL, and that's what he's doing. So when we asked him that, and he kind of bumbled around, he said, "Well, I'm looking at this," or I forget actually what he said. But if you're at the end of July and his school year starts in a little over a month, and he doesn't yet know what his major is, he's going to play hockey, and there's school going on also. It's not the other way around,
right? The other thing that was interesting to me, and this was more of a conversation with Trent Mann, the Sens chief scout, the guy who selected him, is that Trent said specifically that they had identified right wing as an organizational deficiency. Of all the positions on the team, that is the one they feel like they have the least depth in. That is part of the reason that they went ahead with this selection. Now, we don't know what their draft list is. Nobody reveals it even afterward. Oh, this is where we had him ranked. But the Senators now, or at least with this pick, have chosen to kind of fill a spot, not saying that they don't like the player, as opposed to going with the philosophy of a lot of teams in any sport is we're just going to take the next player in our list. Just take we got our list here of 1 to 282. Whoever the next man up is, that's going to be the guy we choose. We don't know if Tyler Boucher was the next guy on their list or whether he was kind of in that range. But, hey, he's a right winger, and we need to fill right wing slot kind of long-term in this organization. So for that reason, we're going to go ahead and pick this player. That was one thing that did jump out to me that is unusual for a team to admit.
Well, you know what? I like you, like everybody else, I have seen a lot of the criticism on social media of the Ottawa Senators over this draft and this draft pick. And I think one of the big things that kind of jumps out at me when I look at it, first thing that I react to is, these automatic suppositions. Well, there were skilled players on the board they could have taken in that spot. Were there? Really? We all knew going into this draft, that this draft, after you get through the first 10, 11, 12 guys, was one of the weaker drafts. And, for the better players in this draft, that's not their fault. But when you're Ottawa and you're drafting at 10, were there really, better skilled players? Well, there's better skilled players that people right now think they're better skilled players. But I think that's when you have to trust your scouting staff to know if that's true or not, number one. Number two, as an organization, do you think you already have enough skilled players who are going to be NHL-level skilled players either on your team right now or in your system? And I think going into it, anybody, whether they're in Ottawa or not, looks at Ottawa's system, and everybody in the league talks about other teams, and everyone kind of concedes that Ottawa has drafted very well and they have lots of prospects. So, if you're looking to form your team, number one, I would look at this draft and say, don't automatically assume that at 10, just because other people either had this player rated much later in the first round or not in the first round, that there were other quote unquote skilled players, number one. Number two, I always kind of take the Brian Murray approach to the term skilled player. Well, are you talking about, just offensively skilled players? Because there's a whole bunch of things that comprise a player that require skills. The tenacity to play the way this player plays is a skill. For other players, Austin Watson, one of his skills is his willingness to be a forward that blocks more shots than any other forward in the NHL. That's a skill. Now, I realize there's been skills in the past that have been looked upon as not really relevant or skills that are easy to replace. But in this league now, replacing players like this, like the player they got, like Tyler Boucher, the things that are on his resume, it has become very tough to develop or replace players like that because there's so few players now who are willing to play that way because it's hard and it's hard on your body. And by and large, you don't make as much money as the guys who get a ton of points. So, I just look at it and I I've said this every year for I don't know how long, and some people just shake their head at me. And I was encouraged to see that you tweeted out virtually the same thing just yesterday. Picking winners and losers the day after an 18-year-old draft is for entertainment and for the fun of pretending you're a general manager, but actually without any knowledge whatsoever, because there's none to have. None of these players are NHL players yet. Saying you know what kind of an NHL player he's going to be, or you know what's other some other guy that was available, what kind of an NHL player he's going to be about an 18-year-old draft is just
it's
not
entertainment
real.
And opinion. That's what it is. And listen, that's what we hopefully try to do here on sports radio every single day when we're talking about things. We're giving you a lot of opinions. We hope to be somewhat entertaining in doing it. But that's all it is. And so I think a lot of people, you know, and look, I understand people in Ottawa were very sensitive right now. If you're a fan of the Ottawa Senators, you're very sensitive right now because your team has been a dog's breakfast for the last 4 years. It's been difficult to be a fan of this team. There is finally some hope, and then they have a draft and people start coming at you again, and they're coming at you and go, oh, yeah, well, that was a crapola draft. There was a bunch of reaches there. Yeah, you're going to go right back in the dumper. And I'm not, again, I'm going to go back to the fact I don't know any of these players, none whatsoever. I haven't seen 1 second of one guy they chose, so I'm not going to give an opinion on it. I'm not an expert in that. I will just go by Trent Mann, and I'm not even going by last year's draft, all right? It looks like they've got some players there. Timmy Stützle's the only guy that played in the NHL. I think we can all agree that so far, so good. He looks like he's going to be a real good NHL player. Beyond that, there seems to be some real nice prospects. I'm a huge Jake Sanderson fan. I think he's going to be a real, real good NHL player, but I don't know that. It's 3 to 4 to 5 years that you can really definitively tell whether a team has had a good draft, whether a chief scout who's made those picks is actually good at what he does. So I've got to go back, and Trent Mann, this was his fifth draft. I got to go back to his first draft, which was 2017. He was only given 4 picks. The first one ended up getting traded in Shane Bowers. Now, that's his pick. He made the pick, and Shane Bowers has yet to make the NHL. All right, so we'll. I don't know about that pick. But I know in the second round, where it's hard to find NHL players in the second round, they've got Alex Formanton. And I think that Alex Formanton, in my opinion, based on what we saw last year, is going to be an NHL hockey player. And they got Drake Batherson in the fourth round, and Drake Batherson is a fourth-round pick who's a first-round talent. That is a home-run draft for the Ottawa Senators. They got a very good to star player in Batherson, and they got an NHL-caliber player in Formanton. If you can get 2 picks out of any draft, you've done one well, let alone a draft in which you only had 4 picks. So that was his first draft. 2018, that was Brady Tkachuk. Brady Tkachuk was chosen fourth overall. We don't need to go over the well-trodden landscape of Tkachuk versus Sedina. I don't think there's an Ottawa Senator fan listening right now that would flip it around and say, yeah, I'd rather have Zadina. I mean, Tkachuk was a home run pick for so many different reasons. That was the right pick for the Ottawa Senators, right? Jacob Bernard-Docker, we'll see if he's an NHL player. He was another first-round pick. And I really only go by the first and second-round guys. Those are the guys traditionally that are going to make up your NHL team. You can find the odd other player, and those are, believe me, those are great extras to have. But in terms of your impact players, they're found usually in the first round, or usually the first half of the first round, and at most the second round. So I'm just saying overall, I think Trent Mann has earned the benefit of the doubt, I guess is my long-winded answer to the questions that have been raised about the effectiveness of this year's draft.
Yeah, and you know what, I think JR, if it were me, I would take it a little bit further in that. You know, you mentioned the appropriate names, the guys that everyone's going to know, and they go, yeah, I get that. I look at how many of their draft picks get to the point where you sign them. Because just because you draft a player doesn't mean you ever sign him to a contract. Between the time he's 18 and you sign him to a contract to one day be a professional, whether it be in your AHL system, or your East Coast League team, which Ottawa still doesn't have one affiliation for this year, or your NHL team, if you get to the point where you sign them to a contract, it's because they've gotten to the point where they have value in the marketplace. And if you start going through, you know, the drafts since he took over, everybody of the four players that they drafted in 2017, the goalie Jordan Hollett is the only one who hasn't ended up playing professionally in either the AHL or the NHL. And Shane Bowers is still in Colorado's system and playing, I think, in their AHL team. But, you know, you look at Brady's draft, and they obviously signed Brady. They've signed Jacob Bernard-Docker. Johnny Tyconek isn't signed, but he was still in college at the end of last year. Johnny Gruden, they have traded. Cruikshank is playing. Mandalese is playing. Jakub Novák finishes last year of college last year, so he could be signed, as the same thing for Luke Lohheit. And again, you go through 2019. They've signed to a contract Maxim Skinet. You know, Kostelec is playing. Victor Lodin is coming over this year. Matt Sogard is playing. Pinto is playing. Thompson is playing. You know, so if you look at their conversion rate from draft to signing, their conversion rate is higher than average in the NHL. I don't know exactly what the number is, but, you know, since the Manns, the brothers, came to the Ottawa organization, since, you know, one was here before the other, but since 2017, since they started, drafting under a man, you look at the conversion rate from draft to contract, and it's very high. It's very high. And it's not just those NHL players that you convert on. That's the one that, those are the things that catch everyone's attention. But, you know, Roope Järventi is coming here. You know, Tyler Cleven hasn't signed yet. He's still in college. But who now looks at the, after 1 year in the AHL, who looks at the Sokolov signing as a chancy move because he was bypassed in his first draft, and then Ottawa took a chance on him in his second draft year, and people thought, oh, that big Russian kid's not going to skate well enough to be a pro. Oh, he skates well enough. And now, you know, people around the league are going, who took the pass on the huge Russian who can score? Who passed on that? Well, Ottawa didn't pass on that. So yeah, all I'm saying is, you know, they have had a very, very good conversion rate on draft to contract since 2017.
They have, and I think the other piece just to the Ottawa draft, and it has become very apparent through the players they chose. And again, we'll stick with Tyler Boucher because he is the most likely to make the National Hockey League. They have chosen a style of player, and this goes back to when Brian Murray was running the team, and now Pierre Dorion learned under the wing of Brian Murray. And since he has taken over as general manager, and Trent Mann is also carrying the flag on this. Big physical hockey players are what the Ottawa Senators have been about and are going to be about going forward. They have some skilled players. I still think they could use another skilled player, highly skilled player. They're hard to find, but Timmy Stützle at the top of the list. But boy, you look at a lot of what they're trying to build. We'll see if these guys become NHL players. But these are the type of players as we see every year in the playoffs. To me, there's two kinds of hockey. There's regular season hockey and there's playoff hockey. The way that playoff hockey is officiated, you need big, tough physical players. You need that aspect to you. The Ottawa Senators are building their team around that. Now, they got to make the playoffs. That's part of the equation. You got to get there first. But once they get there, the types of players they have would seem to be the types of players who would be effective in that kind of hockey.
John, you just look right now in this era. I agree with you 100%, but you're right. You just look at the teams that win because it's a copycat league. This is not Ottawa going off on its own tangent. This is how you win. Look at the way Tampa plays. Sure, you look at the high-skill guys, but look at the way that team plays. Look at the way Washington played. Look at the way St. Louis played when they won. It was not by playing tic-tac-toe hockey. And those are the teams that harvest points during the regular season. But in the playoffs, it is a totally different deal. So do you want to try and build a team to win the President's Trophy? Or do you want to try and build a team to win the Stanley Cup? Well, the teams that win the Stanley Cup play that way with those kinds of players. So, you know, you can win yourself five President's Trophies, but if you can't get out of the first round, what does it matter? So I see this as a philosophical move and a move that this head coach likes because that's the style of team he wants. And so his general manager is trying to give it to him. But it's not because he's trying to appease the coach. It's because Pierre Dorion looks around the league. He sees what's going on, and you see what style of hockey wins in the playoffs.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. We're asking you to play teacher and give the Sens a report card on their 2021 draft. And again, it's maybe what you read. It's maybe what you've watched on YouTube. Maybe you have personal firsthand knowledge of some or all of these players. But what grade would you give the Sens on their 2021 draft? An A, a B, a C, or a D? Let us know. Go to our website, tsn1200.ca, and vote on our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question of the day. All right, it's 7:57. We need to play our TSN 1200 $1,000 Minute. How'd you like to start the new week with $1,000 in your pocket? I'm guessing it's 100% affirmative on that. All right, if you'd like to play, be lucky, texter number 65 at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. Texter number 65. All I need is your name. We will come back and do that. Somebody plays for $1,000 next on TSN 1200.
$1,000 minute.
All right. We got our contestant ready to go this morning, and it is Alexander. How are you doing this morning, Alexander?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Thanks. Nice weekend.
Yeah, couldn't complain.
All right, good. Oh, perfect. Okay. Sounds like you spend a bit of money, so you would like to replenish your piggy bank, correct?
Yeah, why not?
How about with $1,000?
Yeah, couldn't complain.
Okay, all right. Alexander, I got 10 questions. You got 60 seconds. You go 10 for 10. You're going to win the aforementioned $1,000. We'll give you $10 per correct answer. Here's the way the contest works. I need all of your answers by the time the 60-second buzzer goes. I need to accept your first full, complete answer. And if you want to, you can pass on a question. If we have time, we'll go back to the question, okay?
Gotcha.
All right. I'm going to ask you to speak up nice and loud. We want you to win $1,000, Alexander. So we wish you good luck. And we're going to start in 3, 2, 1, go. True or false, Canada has won a gold medal already at these Olympics?
True.
What nationality is Sens first-round draft pick Tyler Boucher?
American.
Which team originally drafted Seth Jones?
Ooh, Nashville.
Which hockey team did the famous French Connection play for?
Pass.
In what sport do they compete for the Gold Cup in?
Soccer.
Nick Hjalmarsson won 3 Stanley Cups with what team?
Chicago.
Did Hall of Famer Larry Robinson finish his career with the Hawks, the Kings, or the Rangers?
The Rangers.
Sebastian Aho signed an offer sheet with what NHL team?
Montreal.
True or false, mountain climbing is an Olympic sport this year?
False.
Name any team that Brian Boucher played for.
New Jersey.
Which hockey team did the famous French Connection play for?
The Philadelphia Flyers.
Okay, all right. They've had some famous lines. We'll find out if the French Connection was one of them. All right, Alexander, what'd you think? You got all 10?
Mic on.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, here we go. True or false? Canada's won a gold medal already at these Olympics. It is true. We got one in the pool last night, so you're right there. What nationality is Tyler Boucher? You're right there. He's American. Seth Jones was drafted by Nashville. You got that one right. French Connection played for the Buffalo Sabres. We're going back to the 70s. Buffalo Sabres. Very famous hockey line, though. In what sport did they compete for the Gold Cup in? Soccer. You're right there. Canada's into the semis. Nick Hjalmarsson won 3 Stanley Cups with what team? Chicago is the correct answer there. Hall of Famer Larry Robinson finished his career with the, you said the Rangers, it's the LA Kings. LA Kings is the right story, right to answer there. Sebastian Aho signed his offer sheet with the Habs. That's right. Mountain climbing is not, at least at this point, a sport at the Olympics yet. So false is correct there. Brian Boucher played for a lot of teams. The Devils was not one of them. He played for, in no particular order, Philadelphia, Phoenix, Calgary, Chicago, Columbus, San Jose, and Carolina. In fact, he spent 3 different stints with the Philadelphia Flyers. So, well-traveled. And his son, Tyler, of course, drafted by the Sens. All right, what do we got for Alex?
We still have $70 for Alex.
How's that sound?
That sounds pretty good. I'll take that.
That sounds like a couple of rounds of golf to me. Alexander, congratulations, my friend. Way to go.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You as well.
All right, there we go. Dean, did you play along in the at-home version?
I did. I would not have won. I got one wrong, and I think you can probably guess which one I got wrong. I don't follow soccer very much, so the Gold Cup question, I got that wrong. Oh. I got all the other ones right.
Nicely done. Dean, for you, we have, let's divide by zero, nothing, unfortunately.
Oh. I was hoping for something.
Other than our thanks for playing the game. All right. We'll get a top-of-the-hour news and sports update, bring you right up to date on what's going on over at the Olympics. Canada now up to 4 medals. And when we come back, we'll talk about a very busy NHL weekend with our TSN hockey insider, Brian Boucher. No. He's the ESPN
he's coming
analyst.
Again?
Dave Poulin will join us next on TSN 1200.